What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny's Pixar in Review. That's right, we are ranking and reviewing every Pixar movie. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Hello, A Bug's Life, ahoy.
The Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
I can't wait.
The Big Dog, Kevin Coelho.
Ahoy, hoy, welcome to A Bug's Life.
Hey, it's A Bug's Life.
Christmas in March, Joey Noel.
Now, time's just flying, guys. Flying
was her by, mic guys. Me?
Yeah, the mic had little issues there, but I think we're good now. I'm hearing you.
I can imagine Nick, like, being the person who works the amusement park thing for Bug's Life. Oh, yeah, Bug's Life.
Everyone, this is Kinda Funny's In Review series, where each week we rank and review two different franchises. This week, we're going to end the week out with the return to the MCU in review, where it all started, with WandaVision, where we will be ranking and reviewing that alongside the rest of Marvel Studios products. But this is the beginning, in some ways, continuation in others, of Pixar in review. Years ago, when Toy Story 4 came out, we did Toy Story in review. So we have already ranked and reviewed Toy Story 1, 2, 3, and 4. So we're starting here with Bug's Life, going back in there.
I don't have any vote on that. This seems broken. I'm just saying that.
Not either.
So we're going to be adding these into that as we go on. And what makes this franchise in review different than the others is that since Pixar is so long and ongoing and there's so many of them, we're going to use this to kind of fill in gaps as we go on. So it won't necessarily be week to week. That'll always be the goal. But with the things upcoming like Godzilla vs. Kong and Mortal Kombat, we are going to properly lead into those. So be patient. We're going to be here for the nice little light fare in between all of the hardcore action of those titans fighting and fatalitying each other. But without further ado, let's get into it. You could watch this show on youtube.com/kindoffunny, or you could watch it on roosterteeth.com. If you want to listen to it, just search for Kinda Funny Reviews, and we will be right there for you to listen to. If you want to get the show ad-free, you got to go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers, the nanobiologist and Sven McHale did. And speaking of the nanobiologist, similar to Lord of the Rings in review, where we had a whole bunch of fun facts brought to you by the Keeper of Facts, Kebabs, nanobiologist is going to be doing a segment on this show where he gets into the Pixar theory of how all these movies fit into each other. He also gave me some fun really facts cool to go off. So shout out to him. Follow him at the nanobiologist on Twitter. Great dude. But today, we're brought to you by MeUndies. I'll talk to you about that later. For now, let's talk about A Bug's Life, with a runtime of 1 hour, 35 minutes, released on November 20th, 1998. Directed by John Lasseter, American film director, producer, screenwriter, animator, voice actor, and head of animation at Skydance Animation. He was formerly the chief creative officer of Pixar at Walt Disney Animation Studios and Disney Toon Studios, as well as the principal creative advisor for Walt Disney Imagineering. In November 2017, Lasseter took a six-month sabbatical from Pixar and Disney Animation after acknowledging what he called, quote, missteps in his behavior with employees. According to various news outlets, Lasseter had a history of alleged sexual misconduct towards employees. And then in June 2018, Disney announced that he would be leaving the company at the end of the year when his contract expired. He's not the only problematic person, as Kevin Spacey had his voice acting debut in this movie as Hopper.
Oh, really? That was his first one?
First voice acting, yeah.
Wow.
Music in this one by Nick?
Randy Newman?
Randy Newman coming in to kill the game.
It's a bug life.
This one had a bunch of this.
Yeah, Andy, you do it better. Andy, give me a little Randy Newman. Give me a little Andy Newman right now. Give me some Andy Newman.
I was going to save Andy it for the plot song.
Yeah. No, okay, do it
we'll
now.
Save. No, we got to save it. We'll save it for the plot. This one had a bunch of...
It's not long. Spoilers, it's not a long song.
This one had a $120 million budget and a box office of $363 million, grossing almost double the amount of rival production Ants with a Z. That also came out in 1998. And I have some fun facts for you about this. This one comes from the nanobiologist. In 1994, there was a death of Disney's number two man, Frank Wells, due to a helicopter engine failure. This created a power vacuum at Disney in Hollywood, which led then Disney CEO and chairman Michael Eisner to fire the studio chief, Jeffrey Katzenberg. Katzenberg is the person who is mostly responsible for the giant Disney stock boom in the 90s and basically saving the company. Out of this fallout, Katzenberg partnered with David Geffen and Steven Spielberg to found DreamWorks, along with Katzenberg winning over $200 million from Disney thanks to Eisner's pettiness and reliance on some other people. DreamWorks then acquired Pacific Data Images, PDI, to help rival Disney while they were making The Prince of Egypt. Thus, the rivalry between the two companies formed. Ants was made from the same pitch as well as through good faith discussions between Lasseter and Katzenberg in the early to mid-90s that led to the divide even further after DreamWorks PDI announced Ants as a competitor to the not-so-well-kept secret of Bug's Life. The feud was so heated that Katzenberg even moved the release date of Ants up by several months from early 1999 to October 98 to compete with the Bug's Life and paid incentives to get people to get Ants ready before a Bug's Life, even with the year's head start Pixar had. Damn. And it's crazy to think about all that and then to think where we end up of, well, then Disney buys Pixar. So kind of doesn't even fucking matter.
Shots fired.
DreamWorks PDI goes belly up and closes down.
For awards, this one won a Grammy for Best Instrumental Composition by Randy Newman. It was also nominated for the Academy Award for Best Original Music or Comedy Score. The film's theatrical and video release include Jerry's Game, an Academy Award winning Pixar short made in 1997, a year before this film was released. Joey Noel, what did you think about A Bug's Life?
I haven't seen this movie in a very long time. I feel like this isn't one of the ones that I go back and rewatch. And I don't know why, because I really enjoyed it. I was not expecting such a stellar cast for going back this far. I guess I don't know why, because Toy Story has a great cast as well. And I didn't realize how much the music for this is so like integral to my love of going to Disneyland and Disney California Adventure. I feel like it's one of the key ones that plays all the time, but I knew that it was a Pixar like theme soundtrack song, but I never knew what it was from. But as I was watching this movie and going through it, I was like, oh my gosh, these are bringing back such like integral memories of when I used to live in Southern California. We used to go to California Adventure when we had passes and stuff like that. I think it's a fun movie. All of the side characters are fun. There was a point in the middle of it when they were going through some of the shenanigans where I was like, this kind of feels like a kid's Disney, like Fast and Furious movie with all of these characters having their own little roles and stuff like that. And it's just like this family, the like circus creatures. But I really liked it. I was surprised. I was at my parents' house this weekend and I was watching part of it with my mom. And I was asking her, I was like, did we like see this in theaters? Like, I don't really have any memories of that. She's like, oh my gosh, yes. Like, I feel like this is one that you like loved because you love the little flying ant girl with the crown. I was Dot. Like, oh.
Yeah, she's cute.
Dot, exactly. I was like, I can't remember any names.
I'll pass you there, Joey. Ashley Tisdale tried out for the part of Dot. And she didn't get it, but she did make it in as the lead Blueberry Scout.
Aww.
Do you know who did the already say who did the voice of Dot?
I blanked. Who was it?
It's Hayden Panettiere.
Awesome.
Amazing. Yeah.
She had such a like a big presence in my life growing up. I feel like between this and I loved Remember the Titans. So.
Yeah, I mean that was like, that was the jam back in the day. She was she crushed it as a child actor and actually did a lot of good work later in life as well.
Mm-hmm. Nick, what do you think of Bug's Life?
This one's always one of those ones that I remember seeing and didn't really resonate with me. I think it was very entertaining this time around, and obviously knowing a little bit more about sort of the Western genre and how they integrated that into here, which is really cool, and you know, both thematically and just as far as like the music and stuff. And I'm just a sucker for Dave Foley as well. I just wish I know he's. Everyone loves him, but I wish he was more popular because I think he's super talented. The cast across the board is just, it's a great cast. And, you know, for Christ's sake, it's got Madeline Kahn in it, which I had no idea when I was a kid, but that just, she has a special place in my heart too because of Clue, because I think she's one of the funniest human beings on the planet. It's good. It's not, to me, it is though a little bit Pixar 1.0, where I don't think they quite developed the amazingly deep the amazingly deep style that we kind of know them for today. Like, they've really elevated the game, but it's cool to see where their roots are, and it's cool to see them kind of nail that like really simple kind of classic storytelling in A Bug's Life.
Andy, what'd you think?
I enjoyed it quite a bit. As somebody who didn't really know anything about Dave Foley, aside from, like, you know, I know that he was on Kids in the Hall. I just don't remember much about that era at all. I kept on thinking, who is this? Is this what's his face? Chris Farley's friend?
No, David Spade. No, David definitely Spade. Not. Very different.
Is this David Spade? Because it has sort of that vibe, and I feel like he was. I thought at this era, because we just came from Tom Hanks being in Toy Story and kind of being that lead role, I thought that we were going to have another big star here, and I kind of just forgot who the hell the cast was in this movie. It's been a long time since I've seen this movie, and it's kind of wild that I still remember all the beats and know all the jokes, because I think they were just overplayed on, you know, VHS back in the day. Really simple story, kind of. It's, you know, not a whole lot of complicated things happening here, and I think it works out really well. It's funny when it needs to be, and kind of punches you in the gut when it needs to, and it's also a little freaky. I remember having the image of the grasshoppers walking out of the fog was
which
just
predates
burned,
episode one,
which was so burned into my brain. And then, yeah, when the Gungans do it in episode one, I was like, oh my god, that's like the Bugs Life shot. And so that I don't know why that shot always just sort of stuck with me as a kid.
Me too, though. That's funny.
Good movie. Enjoyed it. I think it's very, very serviceable, and it reminds me of Marvel, how even the most basic of movies are still fun and enjoyable.
Kev, what'd you think?
The cast is wild. Like, looking down, wild. Like, who was Dim? And then it's like, I look it up, and it's like Brad Garrett, and it's like
Brad Garrett.
Oh, okay, yeah, that makes total sense.
Yep. I mean, wow, Julia Louis Dreyfus as the princess as well. I mean, she does a great job.
I feel like Dave
Phyllis Diller is the queen.
Foley.
Come on.
Foley is just the one name where it's like they went with him. Like, I've always known him as like a random side character and stuff.
Looking it up, I think he was on News Radio at the time as well. So that was kind of a popular show, but that's my touchstone to him. But I don't remember it being like groundbreakingly super popular.
He also apparently in the South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut movie played the Baldwin brothers.
That's amazing.
It's a weird little fact.
That's great.
I enjoy this movie a lot. I mean, it's Kevin Spacey so good as the villain, and it's just one of those things that, like, now it kind of, like, sucks to watch that and be like, oh, he's so good, but he's a terrible human being, you know? Also, and this is going to be controversial, I think, but I was always more of an ants person. I just like ants more, and I'm not sure.
I will say I agree. I think it's just the exposure. I think I saw ants first, and to Tim's, like, earlier point, I was I was 18 when this movie came out, but still stupid as shit. And I was like, whatever came out first, that's the one I'm rooting for. So I probably saw Ants first and was like, fuck A Bug's Life.
The
that's
other
just
one
a cheap
ripped
rip-off.
The other one off.
Yeah, that's a ripoff.
Ants was also more adult, if
Come on,
I'm
it had,
remembering
it had,
correctly.
Yeah, it was. And it had J-Lo in it, and it had Sylvester Stallone. Yeah.
So what's interesting is I was reading a lot of trivia about the whole Ants versus Bug's Life thing. And like the core premise of both movies, like you can boil it down to make them sound identical. But the difference is A Bug's Life is much more of an adaptation of like the Seven Samurai type story. Whereas Ants was a bit more like the Seven Samurai with like slapstick comedy gags and things. Whereas the Ants was a little bit more piffy with the dialogue, and it was more kind of like adult focused in the way that it was more about what's being said as opposed to what's being shown.
Well, I also liked Ants because I think the main theme that it explored was like not being stuck to the class that society wants you to be stuck in, right? Like he was a worker ant and Sylvester Stallone was like a soldier ant or whatever, and they ended up trading places, which I thought was kind of a fun sort of fish out of the water story. Again, I've seen Ants twice, and this is probably my second time seeing Bug's Life.
Though,
so it's one of those, but it's one of those definitely like, oh man, I don't know why I have allegiance to either of these films.
It's funny because like Bug's Life is very Seven Samurai's in the beginning, but it deviates toward the end. Because in Seven Samurais, they actually find samurai, right?
Yeah, they bring warriors in to actually defend the village, right? This, to me, is a little bit more like Pale Rider, where the Pale Rider comes in and teaches the village how to trick everyone you know, all the all the gang of like Western bad guys. And so me, like this, obviously the music wise, they wanted you to think like Western as well. And I think, and then obviously there's like a biker gang aspect of it too. It's like, let's ride. No, which, you know, and you say what you will about Kevin Spacey as a garbage human being, but he did a really good job voice acting wise in this.
Do you think it was this movie where they're like, John Ratzenberger, let's start a legacy right here? Because, like, you know, obviously he's PT, the flea or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's phenomenal as PT. He but, really like, at what point did they decide it was going to be a thing? John Ratzenberger was going to be in every movie.
Well, Toy Story, he came back as he was one of the main characters, though, or one of the side characters. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but, like, at what point did, like, you know, they cast him again for Bug's Life? At what point did they say, you know what, we got to have Ratzenberger in every movie? This is just like the
it
good
must have been
sort
after A Bug's Life.
It has to be Monsters, Inc.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, we need one more person. Let's get John
got
in.
Just
and
the
then,
guy.
John's not doing shit. Yeah.
Yeah, I love this movie. It was definitely, it's one of the first memories I have of seeing a movie in theaters. And I remember seeing it, like, I think twice in theaters. And I just loved the cast so much. And to this day, I still do. I do think it's, you guys are right, it's a lot simpler than where we end up with Pixar. But one of the most interesting things about Pixar is every movie they try to do something that's technologically advancing where they're at with animation and all that stuff. And with Bug's Life, their big thing was making sure that they're not using humans, they're using bugs, and to make sure that they have a bunch of different points of articulation or whatever, and that no ant looks identical. So no matter how many ants there are, like, they used a bunch of algorithms and stuff to make sure that they all were at least a little unique. And things like that are just so cool. Where it's like, you can tell they're like, we had the story for this, we have the tech advancement for this, how do we make this work into something that's actually going to, you know, be a viable product? And seeing this, I'm like, I like how simple they kept it, because it was straight forward and to the point, and it allowed us to actually like the characters and see them interact with each other. And, you know, you kind of like are cheering for them at the end. There's not like the tear jerking moments that we kind of now expect from Pixar, but I don't think everyone needs to have that. And I very much enjoyed this, watching it in 2021, because it feels so quaint visually. Like, this was so state of the art back then, but it's so empty, and it's so just kind of like,
oh, well, yeah, there's literally a moment where the background is just a gradient of beige in one of the shots, because they were like, we need to put some fog back there. We can't render this whole thing. But I'll say, though, Tim, to your point, it's the movie is just is very well made, and it's very well structured. And yes, visually, it's not as stunning as we are used to now. But what they lack in that, I really do feel like they make up in creativity. And I haven't seen this movie in so long that it was actually kind of like watching it for the first time. There's a moment where he goes and he's like, I'm heading toward the big city. And then the camera pans upward and it's just a trailer, like this dilapidated trailer with some stairs up to it. But he goes underneath the stairs and it becomes this like major metropolitan city, which, you know, I just feel like that's where Pixar always shines. Like, regardless of the technology, they're always just super creative and having a lot of fun with just how the real world elements of what we know translate over to the insect or the bug world.
Yeah, that really became their strength of, what does a city look like to bugs? What does a city look like to monsters? Mm-hmm. What does the role of a receptionist look like in a monster world? What does the role how does a bartender how does a bartender in a bug world look? You know, they always have like the versions of those things. It is funny watching this movie, though, because obviously this is, you know, back in the day they didn't have all the great lighting and shading capabilities that they have now. But it was funny watching on Disney Plus because of how damn good their streaming service is, where it felt like playing an Xbox 360 game, but just kind of remastered in 4K, where it looks dated, but it's still sharp as all. Again, let me just repeat. I want every streaming service to be like Disney Plus. It looks so goddamn good. Believe it. Why does it look super digitized and shitty like everybody else?
Because they have good codecs, and they have the 4K, and
Amazon play nice with all HDRs.
Like, I took this screenshot. I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah, he's like, sitting down.
He's sitting down, but he's nowhere even near that bench.
His butt's not even close to the
bench. Close to touching. No. And it's like, it's things like that throughout the movie that are just like, it's funny to see, where it's just like, you can look back and totally understand why that happened, but it's just funny now because the quality of the movie is so high from every perspective, even technically for the time, but watching it now, it's just like, especially comparing it to like Onward or Toy Story 4, where it's just so beautiful.
Yeah,
but
you can't.
There were some shots,
small beginnings, man.
There are some shots here in the beginning moments where the ants are just sort of standing on the graphite or on the, not graphite, but on the dirt or whatever.
The rocks.
And it looks like there are some moments where it's kind of hard to say this, but the bugs look like they're green screened in front. Like,
yeah,
they
the
don't,
compositing's not
like
exactly
they were composited
perfect, yeah,
onto this ground, which, and they may have been, but it just seems like there was kind of a disconnect and there's still shadows underneath them, but it felt like they just were not really in the scene. And I know that's not how animation works, but it just kind of looked, it was like, when we talked about on WandaVision, was that a green screen shot? I had the same sort of reaction here. Mm-hmm. Like, are those bugs green screened? Like, they don't really look like they were there.
So some interesting facts before we get into the plot. A Bug's Life was the first home video release to be entirely created using a digital transfer. Every frame of animation was converted from the film's computer data as opposed to the standard analog film to videotape transfer process. This allowed for the film's DVD release to retain its original 2:35:1 widescreen format.
Oh.
So there you go. There's some of that stuff. And then going back to nanobiologist here, I will give you some of the there's going to be reoccurring Easter eggs throughout a lot of the Pixar movies. And then there's the Pixar theory itself. So the Pizza Planet delivery truck has quickly become a staple Easter egg in most Pixar movies. The car makes an appearance parked right in front of the trailer house. John Lasseter even admitted that Pixar thinks that the trailer house shown is the home of the Pizza Planet delivery driver. A113, the room most animators have their first class at California Institute of the Arts, appears in the box as Flick is walking into the big city. The Luxo ball, the famed ball first shown in the Luxo Jr. short, actually doesn't make an appearance in this one. It's one of the few times they don't add it to one of the movies. And then Hidden Mickey, a staple to nearly every Disney movie, is a Hidden Mickey, things that just happen to look like the head of Mickey Mouse. This one appears during the painting sequence as the scouts pamper and paint Francis. On the left side, the middle scout holds what looks like actual Mickey ears that you'd wear in the parks. And then to get to the Pixar theory itself. So this is where future spoilers, there's no way to avoid them because there's a lot of mixing a bunch of things. So what we're going to do is just for this bit, I'll read it all and just keep it in mind for when we're watching the other movies.
Cool.
So the Pixar theory is brought to you by the nanobiologist. There's a recurring theory that every single Pixar movie is connected in some way. A Bug's Life was hard to pin down, but eventually it was revealed when WALL-E came out. Instead of being during modern time in a desert, it's actually way in the future. The tree that is seen a lot is eerily similar to the tree that Jesse was left by in Toy Story 2, as well as the tree that Carl and Ellie hang out by a lot during the intro in Up, but this could just be a coincidence. Same for the Pizza Planet delivery truck and mobile home. Those are just left there as they appear very decrepit. There's several lines that allude to these ants being very genetically evolved. First, they say that they've been around for quite some time, as well as one ant saying he feels 90 again. Ants only live 3 months, but living a whole summer and for years means that they have survived a long time and evolved to live much longer than normal ants. Plus, the rocks they stacked to build a platform for the grasshopper's food would have taken much more strength than what current ants can lift. Also, there's no mention of humans beyond the trash left behind and that one bug whose wings got plucked. What if there were very few humans around because they were just returned to Earth, like with WALL-E? Also, that plant we see planted in WALL-E, many believe it to be the tree that grows to be the home in A Bug's Life. Finally, eating these super intelligent bugs leads animals to become hyper intelligent and the dominant species that leads into a later movie. ... So all this stuff, bad shit insane, and definitely grasping at straws, but it's fun. It's definitely fun. So we're gonna be keeping up with all of that stuff.
When the bug said he feels 90 again, 90 hours. I mean, they have a different way of telling time.
Or 90 days.
It's a bug's life. Like ant life.
It is a bug's life.
Debunk, dude. Debunk.
Debunk. Let's get to the plot.
Hold on. So tell us the story. Yeah, Nick, tell us the story. And this is where you come in, Nick.
I'm sorry. A Bug's Life, everyone.
I told you it was short.
It was good. It was really good. Oh, I was so into it that I was like, yeah, let's just keep going, Randy. Take me throughout the world. I usually pull a quote for this, but I didn't do it this time. We'll just start with an ant, then a lot of ants, and somehow these ants, despite having been rendered in 1998, still look better than those found in the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. They're all scavenging for nuts and berries to make that cool little packet I like to get at Starbucks sometimes. A leaf falls in front of one of them. We get a fun bit where he's like, I'm lost, I don't know which way to go. And they have to call in like one of the specialists who's like, no, you're just gonna go right around the leaf. He's like, it's so cold out here. The queen, of course, we get introduced to queen played by Phyllis Diller, who, if you're not familiar with Phyllis Diller, always used to do a bang up job as a guest star on Scooby-Doo as herself, Phyllis Diller. She is teaching her daughter Atta, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, to run the yearly gathering. But Atta is stressed out by the whole ordeal because it's her first time really taking control. We also get introduced to the younger princess, Dot, who is played by Hayden Panettiere. As she's flying, she's trying to fly, but her wings don't quite work yet. Then Flick, we get introduced, played by Dave Foley, uses his invention to harvest grain to speed up production. He also knows how to make a telescope, but none of the old people are having any of this. Let's see. Dot brings Flick back his telescope and tells him she likes his inventions, but he still feels like he's never going to make a difference. And then Dot sympathizes. She's like, I'm never going to be big enough, and I'm never going to make a difference either. I'm not going to be and make a good queen because I'm too small. And Flick teaches her a fun lesson about a small seed growing into a big tree. But they don't really use analogies ever because Dot's like, I don't understand what you're talking about. It's a rock. And he's like, just imagine it's a seed. But she's like, it's so a rock. It's a really funny scene. The alarm sounds.
Kids,
everyone.
Kids are the worst. Kids are the worst.
I know.
She is very small.
She is. The alarm sounds. Everyone finishes putting food on the offering stone and jet back to the ants' hill for protection, except for Flick, who drops off the remainder of his food left in his machine. But when he does so, the machine malfunctions and drops the entire offering off the cliff into
this gave
a pond
me so
below.
Much stress.
Fuck yeah,
very
dude.
Stressful.
Oh my god, having to walk back in there and like. There's nothing you can do about this. You're fucked.
You've just killed the entire colony because these grasshoppers are just going to bite your head off and eat you for food. Of course, they do hear the grasshoppers arriving outside first. And I like how this scene is shot. They're just in the colony in like, you know, looking around and we hear the impending doom before we see it. Seeing no food, of course, the grasshoppers led by Hopper, played by... Damn, now I'm blanking on his name. Kevin Spacey. Thing. You break through the ceiling above and threaten the colony. And it's super, super creepy. Hopper.
It's fucking terrifying.
It's scary.
That's the scene that stuck with me all these years is just stomping through the ceiling.
Who here's been on the Bugs Life ride in Disneyland?
Which one?
Anyone?
Wait, the movie?
I think I have.
The California Adventure.
Like the movie theater experience?
The like
thing?
Movie one?
Yeah.
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 All right.
Have you, Andy?
No.
Okay, so let me explain to you it's gone, RIP. But in California Adventure, there used to be this thing where it was like Flick putting on a show and like.
When did it leave, by the way, real quick? When did it leave?
Like 2 years ago. Like, they're replacing it with Adventure.
For the MCU.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, but it was the scariest thing in the world because you'd be in there and like you go underground and it looks like you're in this anthill and like they would have the grasshoppers and shit, like big physical puppets like pop out of the ceiling. Like in the scene,
shit.
And it was horrifying. But on top of that, they would have like the stink bugs would come in and like put like fart bombs into like the theater, so you like smell them. But then there'd be like these, I forgot what it was, like bees or something, and you would hear the bees buzzing around
right
you, and they everywhere just, and then they had these stingers in your seats that would poke you in the ass.
I hate that.
And it was scary as shit.
Wait,
and
was this
terrifying?
Time, without fail, it would happen, and then just children crying constantly.
Did they?
Like,
did they
immediately?
Did they repurpose this from that one Alien ride?
No, that was a different thing. That they only
I wrote
did a
that. I did
times.
That one in Florida.
That was in Florida.
Where, like,
yeah.
You felt things like
super
crawling
scary.
On you, or like
they had to close
you felt
it down.
Something
it was too
hidden.
Scary.
Really? Wow.
Yeah,
crazy. I remember. I watched the Muppet Show in the Muppet Theater, and they had that gag where the rats would get let out, and it would blow all the air by your feet, and you're like, dude, it freaked me the fuck out. I was like, that was good. You got me, dude. You got me. Back to the plot, of course. Hopper's there. We get introduced to his brother Molt, who's an idiot too, and I forget that actor's name, but he is just fucking hilarious in everything.
I hate him so much.
Richard Kind.
I think he's so funny.
He passed away, didn't he?
Did he? Oh, that's unfortunate.
Because he's wait, maybe I'm off. Richard Kind.
No,
yeah,
he's still alive.
Oh, he's still alive. Oh my god, you know what? I just got. I think Charlotte, formerly of Inside Gaming, or somebody always posts a picture of Richard Kind and like acts like he died. I think I got. I think that's what it was.
You just rich rolled.
Yeah, wow. You know why I got? Because he's always on. He is the brother of Super Dave Osborne on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Super Dave Osborne passed away.
That's
but he plays the brother of that guy.
He does. That's
god,
right.
I got so bad.
Hopper, going back to the plot, Hopper tells the ants they still have a few months until the rainy season so they can use that time to gather their food for the grasshoppers. But that, unfortunately, is usually the time they use to gather the food for themselves. If they can't get all that together before the rainy season, they're doomed. Turns out the grasshoppers are running a little protection scam. If the ants don't pay up, there's no telling what other insects might come in and cause them harm. Hopper threatens Dot, and then but nobody steps up except for Flick, who stands up for her, but backs down when it comes face to face with the giant Hopper. Hopper tells them to double the order because of his insolence. They'll be back when the last leaf falls. Then they ride out like a motorcycle gang, and I gotta be honest, it's kind of cool. I just want to be at one point. Let's ride.
Let's
and
ride.
All of us get on motorcycles.
What a great setup for bad guys, though. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like this. Yeah. This is one of the more evil bad guys we have in these Pixar movies, and I appreciate that.
Flick gets put on trial by the elders, and they sentence him to, at first they sentence him to 1 month of digging in the tunnels until they reminded the last time that happened, he collapsed all the tunnels. And then they ask him just to leave the island. He's like, listen, I got a great idea. I'm going to leave the island, go get help, find some bigger bugs to come there and fight so we can be rid of Hopper and the other gang forever. And, they of course okay that plan, and he's super proud of himself at first until you realize, no, they just want to get rid of him and they think he's probably going to fail and die out in the desert. And it's kind of sad. Actually, I'm sorry. That's not what they thought. They thought this is going to take him weeks, which is actually kind of a good idea. So they let him go. Flick leaves and everyone cheers, which he's like, oh, that's cool. It's a sign of encouragement, but they're all just cheering because he is a massive fuck up.
So good. And he has such a good little reaction. The animator like, just nailed the all right.
Dot and some of the younger ants, who I believe are in a little club called the Blueberries, follow him out of town and tell him he's probably going to die. And then Flick's like, don't worry about it, guys. I got this. Like, well, how are you going to get across that giant gorge? And he uses, of course, his ingenuity to pass it. He climbs up to a dandelion, rips off one of the feathers, and takes off into the wind. And it's very triumphant at first until he drops too low and slams into one of the rocks below. And then, of course, we cut over to the Flea Circus, where we are introduced to the full circus led by P.T. Flea, who is John Ratzenberger. Of course, we got Slim, Heimlich, Francis, Rosie, and a bunch of other characters that we'll get introduced here. We also see shout out to Madeline Kahn, who plays the Gypsy Queen, and Manny, her husband, who is a magician. Francis, who is played by Dennis Leary. A lot of Dennis Leary in my life lately, guys, because as you know, we just watched Devilish Man, and he's in that as well. He was very popular in the late 90s, apparently, it turns out.
My friend Dennis Leary loved that Fireman show that he was on.
Yeah, I was going to say early aughts, too, because he was in Rescue Me, which is the Fireman
show. Yeah, Rescue Me.
That show went wild.
Love that show, yeah.
Real crazy.
Yeah.
Of course, he gets into a fight with two of the audience members, two flies in the audience who don't like the show because it is just objectively terrible. As Manny and the Gypsies are doing a bad magic trick, which is a fun little callback here. Call forward here, because they're using the Chinese Cabinet of Mystery, which is, in fact, just a Chinese takeout container.
It's great.
Which is great. Rosie, played by Bonnie Hunt, shout out to Bonnie Hunt, takes the stage to do the flaming... Yeah, it was Bonnie Hunt. To do the flaming death trick, and then Tuck and Roll come in. And I do remember watching this the first time and laughing every time Tuck and Roll do
that. Something...
They're my favorite.
Doesn't surprise me about that. So funny.
They're so funny. They're so funny. They're funny. It's just because, like... Every time, it's not
they got
only,
me again.
It's clear that they don't understand anything that's going on.
No.
They also don't care. And they're constantly having their own little conversations that at the end with the antenna where it's like,
I love when the spider is talking to her or whatever, and she's like, nope, okay, never mind. Yeah, you don't understand. It's just so good.
She's trying to coordinate. They're like, nope, you don't understand. I think I'll take it. And the trick ends up going horribly wrong, and PT gets lit on fire, and everyone wants their money back. So he fires the entire gang. Later that night, Harry looks into the light and gets... Oh. I was like, wait, there's no characters named Harry. No, there is that one moment where it's two flies, one of whom is named Harry, looks into the light. He's like, Harry, don't go into the light. He gets fried.
It's so beautiful.
As Flick, of course, goes into this big city below the stairs, which is below the mobile home, which I thought was really creative. He spots a bouncer kicking someone out of a bar and heads in to find some tough bugs. He's a couple funny moments here that I like, where he's like, who ordered the poo-poo platter? And a bunch of flies coming and eat it. And then, hey, I ordered this with no salt. It was another fun little gag because a slug was eating it and started frying.
You know, we always talk about Pixar movies just being so good for kids and adults. And I think that's in a lot of different ways. But I just got to say, as a kid, there was nothing funnier than this fucking movie. Like everything you just said, the poo-poo platter, don't go to the light, like all that stuff. Like that is like roll on the floor laugh type shit when you're 9 years old.
That I'm 41 years old and I forgot that Harry don't go into the light and it got an audible laugh out. I was like, that's fucking genius writing. And it's so perfect.
That little town city thing was so cool to see him walk into too and see like, I love when he's like, don't be a country bug, don't be a country bug. And he's like trying to like amp himself up to do this big task. But like seeing the little like lightning bug change like the stoplights and stuff like that, all these things and that poor little grasshopper or cricket over that lost its wings. It's just like they managed to pull like all these things. It's like, oh, you totally nailed like how a bug would, what a bug city would look like and stuff like that.
It's funny.
I was really impressed looking back on it.
I remember being a kid and seeing the little grasshopper that didn't have the wings on the ground, and I was just like, wow, it is just like the city. the amount of like upset homeless people that we see growing up like in San Francisco, there's a lot. And like it's funny, like now that you're saying that, it's like I remember like legitimately sitting there being like, it's just like the city.
Yeah, and Pixar knows how this area looks, yeah.
The troupe from the circus, of course, over in the corner, having one final drink to lament the loss of their jobs. But it's cut short when the flies from the audience show up with one of their big friends to start a fight with Francis. And they go, okay, well, what are we going to do? We have to do the Robin Hood Act, I think is what they called it, and accidentally end up taking down the entire bar, which Flick doesn't necessarily see per se, but takes to mean that these people are warriors. So he sets about hiring them, and they're all very happy to accept because, again, they're out of a job. Back at the colony, ants are dropping left and right. Double quota is taking a toll on them. Dot spots Flick's arrival through the telescope, which I like. I think it's cute that she kept that and kept using that, and rejoices at his return. Everyone seems really impressed with the gang, and it looks like things are looking up, but Ada isn't sold. She says, quote, "We don't fight grasshoppers. We don't, but they will," is what Flick says. Thinking they're losing the gig, Francis makes a bold proclamation to the entire colony. He says, "Our troop is guarantees a performance like no other. When your grasshopper friends get here, we're gonna knock them dead."
I love all the little nods to acting. Like, break a leg, like, wow, you guys are vicious, or whatever. Yeah. Like, it's so good.
Later that day, the colony. Go ahead, Kev.
I was just going to say, again, this is a moment where I have so much anxiety and everything's like, if only they could communicate with each other, you know? Like, it's so stressful.
This isn't going to end well.
Later that day, the colony puts on a kid's show for the warriors, telling them the story of how they think the impending fight with the grasshoppers is going to go, which includes Heimlich's death. And reality sets in. Hey, they don't want us to do a show. They want us to actually fight these things. Rose tells Flick the truth, and he freaks out. She's like, dude, we can't fight these guys. He and the troop have it out, and the troop leaves. But Flick begs them to stay until he can come up with a better plan. He chases them into the bird's nest, and they all run screaming for their lives as the bird actually comes to life and start chasing after them. But back in the colony, Dot flies high above on a dandelion trying to catch up with them. The bird catches up and she falls, but Francis catches her. The queen and her team watch in horror through the telescope, but they can't quite see. So Ada uses Flick's magnifying glass, telescope. Slim uses Heimlich as a diversion while Rose and Dim rescue Francis and Dot and flies them to safety into the rose bushes.
I love when Heimlich's stuck.
Yeah, he's like, oh no.
Wait, what a goddamn cast. Because, like, you just Heimlich himself, it's like, yeah, sure, the tuck and roll, they're hilarious. But then you also have Heimlich, it's like, oh, motherfuckers, this is great.
Well, and what's his name from Frasier is so funny and so serious.
Pierce is Slim.
Feels so Niles in it, too, he's where it's so just like, great. Oh, you've nailed that kind of character.
When they return, the troop is greeted by sounds of applause coming from the colony. Maybe this gig isn't so bad after all, they start thinking to themselves. Ada thanks Flick for bringing the troop and confides to him that she doesn't feel confident in doing her job. Quote, she says, they're all watching me. And then Flick finishes her sentence saying, waiting for me to screw up. So they have something in common. I will say, to stop here, I don't think they quite relationship. By the end
say
of
that
it,
again,
I don't.
One more time.
I don't think they quite nailed the relationship between Ada and Flick. I feel like it's forced, and by the end of it, There's some little line of romance that I wish. I think if they had made that now, that would just be a friendship, I think. I don't think that they would have forced that need for there to be a romance there. But I don't
know. Yeah, there was like one line of flirtation where he mentioned about, you know, you're... It's sort of similar on the lines of like being a sight for sore eyes. He mentioned something about being attracted to her within the first couple of minutes of the movie, but then that's sort of... That just goes away for quite a while.
Yeah. Ada makes him the official liaison between the ants and the troop, calling him brave for facing the bird. Quote, even Hopper is afraid of birds, which gives Flick his great idea. They're going to build a bird that can scare off the grasshoppers. Adam helps them sell the idea to the colony to help build the bird, and everyone is on board. Of course, they're taking a huge risk here because they have to use all the rest of their time to build this thing instead of mining the rest of the food for Hopper and the gang. Super fun scene where they build the bird using a template cut out of the leaf. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand the plan. What are they going to do? They're going to build this bird.
Scare them off. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, won't they just come back? Like, don't they know that
put the bird back up there if it comes back. But like, there's birds everywhere. Be careful.
But they know that they're coming when the last leaf falls, and that means the rain's coming, and that I think is like stops them from coming back for a long time until spring.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah. They also had a line earlier where Molt's like, hey, you really don't like birds, right, Hopper? And he's like, I don't want to talk about it. So he's like morbidly afraid of these things. So presumably if he knows there's a bird within like a 50-mile radius of a thing, he's just not going there. Although it is nature, so there's birds everywhere. But I digress.
No, there's only one more. There's, in the Wall-E future, there's only one bird.
There's a bird, and he is a terror to anything smaller than him. Ada helps them. Oh, excuse me. So I really like this whole process. We get a little montage of how they cut the bird out of a leaf and then hold it up to the sun, and it projects it down onto the ground to make like a bigger template.
Really
and
cool.
Yeah.
And we see him kind of building it, and of course they build the feathers out of some of the autumn leaves, which make it look more like a bird, which is really cool as well. And then Flick and Ada kind of bond while Francis convalesces because he's been hurt, of course. And this is where he bonds with the blueberries and starts warming up to the idea of the colony and to the idea of potentially being a parent and taking care of something.
I will say, though, that as they're about to build that bird, even as a kid, when they all just lay sticks around the border, my immediate thought was, this isn't going to work. Like, this is terrible idea. This is not going to work. You can't just, like, there's no structure to this, but then they end up kind of, you know, I love how it's Flick's ingenuity and his sort of, you know, wanting to be more than just these worker ants and seeing technology being sort of a savior. I think that's a really cool sort of role for him to play and kind of figuring out a way to engineer this robotic bird that then acts like a Megazord when they're inside of it and they all control it and shit. It's so cool.
Before we move on, let me tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. I love MeUndies. I've loved MeUndies since the day I first put them on my body, and I haven't been able to stop. How many times do I need to tell you? I'm wearing a MeUndies shirt right now. I'm wearing the lounge pants. I'm wearing the socks. I'm wearing the undies. Everywhere on my body has the soft micromodal fabric. I can't believe how soft it is. I love it so much. And as long as they keep making new articles of clothing with it, I'm going to keep buying them. And you can do that too, getting 15% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee by going to MeUndies.com/morning. And you're going to want to do it. Why wouldn't you? It's 100% satisfaction guarantee, and I guarantee you're going to be satisfied. Every single person I know that has tried these undies has fallen in love with them. Ain't that right, Kevin?
I love them. I'm wearing them right now.
I got Gia wearing them now. Greg Miller's been wearing them. Andy's wearing them. Everybody at Kinda Funny is wearing these because they are fantastic. Whether you like classic colors, just a black or a white or a gray, or if you want to get crazy, go bold, go adventurous, they got the options for you. Ton of fun things. Right now, I have some little foxes on me. Little foxes in a nice little light blue. And you too could do that. Get 50% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee by going to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. What's up, Kev?
I was just gonna say, this is another moment where it's like, how are they keeping it in motion? It doesn't seem to have any sort of engine. It's just swinging, and it continues to swing and only conveniently slows down because they, you know, unclip it, which I love the unclipping scene. Anyways, we can keep going.
Meanwhile, Hopper and his gang are living it up south of the border. Axel and Loco con Molt into pitching Hopper on an idea that I've been saying all along. Maybe we shouldn't even bother going back to Ant Island. We're living life out here. We got sun. We got tequila. We got everything we could possibly want. But Hopper can't get past that one ant that stood up to him. And they're like, Hopper, it was just one ant. And then he teaches them a lesson on the power one ant can have to inspire an entire colony. He says, those little ants outnumber us 100-1. If they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those puny little ants in line. They ride out back to the colony as the ants throw one last celebration.
For,
I know, keep them all in line. Well, also ants walk in a line.
Keep those workers in check.
Triple entendre. They throw one last celebration before the return of the grasshoppers. Flick tells the troop they can sneak out after the party, but they've all grown too fond of the colony to leave. We're all in this together. Atta is impressed by how the troop, and especially Flick, have revitalized the colony. The outer patrols signal the approach of what they think is the grasshoppers, and battle stations are called, but it's not grasshoppers. It's actually P.T. Flea looking for his lost circus performers. And when he shows the colony a drawing of them, they bear an odd resemblance to the warriors, and everyone freaks out. Our entire defending strategy was invented by clowns. But the queen takes control. She says, Hopper is never going to, he's like, listen, Hopper's never going to find out. We're going to hide all this crap. We're not going to use the bird. Everyone just go back to normal, and we'll just get as much food as possible, and hopefully that'll be okay. Of course, Atta and Flick get into it. She calls out Flick for lying, and he goes, I just wanted to make a difference, but guess what? You have made a difference. Everyone's going to get their head bit off yet again. The whole place is dying because of you. Flick and his troop. It is a conflict.
Flick.
Flick and the troop head out as the final leaf falls. Hopper and his gang ride in hard, but the offering is simply not enough. So they enslave the colony and take the queen hostage. Dot and the kids escape to the clubhouse. I love this little scene where it's like a little tiny, like, you know, fledgling of a tree that they've carved out. And then they overhear Hopper's plans from one of his men. After the ants collect all the food, they're going to squash the queen as a nice little reminder never to cross the grasshoppers again.
And good little side character right here. Pixar always has to fit in the character that is not a main character, probably not even a named character, but they're going to be like a surfer dude, and they're just kind of doofy. You know, I love it. I love it.
Dot tells the kids to wait in the clubhouse and makes a run for it. Of course, she's chased by Thumper, who is their sort of ravenous dog-like grasshopper. Thumper
chickens
are off a cliff. Terrifying.
Was he like a zombie grasshopper?
No, I think he was an albino zombie. Albino grasshopper.
Got it. Because he doesn't talk or anything, right?
Either? No, they treated him like an animal. Is the thing where, you know, that there's that moment where they're preparing that little trick or whatever, this little upcoming trick in the circus thing, to make the queen disappear. And they're like, they walk up to the queen, and he like freaks out. They're like, oh, Hopper, get down. It's okay. And so they treat him like an animal. And I wonder if he just, I don't know. I have no idea what the hell is up with this goddamn monster, but he scared the shit out of me as a kid.
Yeah.
Like when he growled, oh my God, it freaked the hell out of me.
Yep, me too.
I think it's one of those goofy Pluto situations where they kind of play fast and loose with animals or humans.
Yeah, sure. I think he's just supposed to be this mentally unstable, like, dude that probably used to be a human at one point, but now he's just like, he's just
sharpened
crazy.
His teeth for the last
he's just crazy.
2 months.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, remember, this is, according to nanobiologists, this is a post-apocalyptic future where Mad Max might be happening also. So you never know who's being put
Nick
on a
is just going to make fun of this. Nick is going to...
I love it.
Of course, Thumper chases Dot off the cliff, and at first she thinks she's dead, but she's not. She has figured out how to use her fledgling wings to fly away to safety. Catching up with the troop, Dot tells them Hopper's plan, and then Rosie tells them that they should use the bird, but Flick knows his plan won't work because he's lost all faith in himself, and he's like, listen, it's guaranteed to fail. And she's like, how do you know? He goes, well, show me one thing I've done right, and then Dim tells him us. You've given all of us purpose. Hell, if it wasn't for you, Francis would never have gotten in touch with his feminine side. And everyone has those like, oh, that's nice. And then Flick isn't sold. So Dot gives him the same speech he gave her using the rock as an analogy for the seed that sprouts into a tree. And then he gets him super fired up. But the rest of the troop doesn't understand it. So they're like, I guess it must be an ant thing, which is going to come back later.
The way they handle that is so adult. Like, because all she does is give him the rock and say it's a
rock,
C.
Yeah.
And like, because we know the context, like that's a, I feel like a big step for like what seemingly is a kid's movie.
Yeah, they weren't, but also like they weren't there, like. They weren't there for the
no,
moment,
yeah, no.
Right?
That's why.
Yeah, that's why
like,
they're horribly
that's
confused.
That's why it's. Yeah. But like, I'm saying the way they handled the conversation for like the audience of like they knew that like just they had delivered
yeah,
that line
subtext.
So many times earlier, yeah. And then they contrast it with like showing us the other people watching being like, "What the hell could that mean?"
Oh yeah, I mean, again, this is a perfect example of Pixar being Pixar, right? Like, this is a great kids movie, but that one line, Kevin, to your point, it's all subtext. She doesn't recreate the speech for him. She doesn't say, "Hey, remember that time you told me that you know this was a seed and a seed." She just gives him the rock, and she's and we understand because they're such good storytellers what that's supposed to mean.
They
and then
really
of course
are,
we get that
man.
We get that fun moment of comedic beat where the rest of the troops like, "What the fuck are they talking about?"
And also, kids, don't worry. If you don't understand the subtext, we'll have like a little fart joke later for you.
Yeah,
this is for everybody.
It's a state bug.
Yeah.
Let's see. Flick and Dot recruit the rest of the blueberries while the circus rolls in the town as a distraction. At first, Hopper wants to squash them until Tuck and Roll save the day, and he's like, "You know what? We could use a little bit of entertainment here." And Tuck
now
and Roll's
that's
like,
fun.
Ha! Ada spots Flick and the blueberries climbing up the bird, climbing up to the bird, while down below the circus does their act for Hopper, which includes transforming the queen to safety using the Chinese box of mystery. Again, hilarious little callback to earlier, which is the takeout box. As he does so, of course, the clouds above gather for the first rain of the season. The launch goes bad of the bird as Hopper catches onto the charade that the kids. The charade below. So the kids improvise using sticks and free the bird. Everyone runs for their life, and the plan seems to work perfectly until P.T. Flea, who was convinced this is a real bird, freaks out and sets the damn thing ablaze. Flick orchestrates an emergency crash landing to save the kids, but Hopper grabs Dot on her way out and demands to know who came up with this bright idea. And then once again, Flick steps out of the rank and stands up to Hopper, who beats his ass senseless.
This is huge. I mean, what a big moment,
so
though.
Much.
Yeah. But for Flick to be like, "No, you know what? No, fuck this." And you're wondering at any moment, is he going to back down right here as Hopper keeps on getting closer and closer? And he just takes a fist to the goddamn cheek and he comes back up and he's like, "No, we're bit." And then Hopper turns around the whole colony there. So cool. This is a cool ass moment.
Yeah, really I wrote these awesome lines down because he says, "Let this be a lesson to all you ants. Ideas are dangerous things. You were put on this earth to serve us." And then he says, "You're wrong, Hopper. Ants are not meant to serve grasshoppers. I've seen these ants do great things. Year after year, they somehow manage to pick food for themselves and you. So who's the greater species? It's you who need us. We're a lot stronger than you say we are, and you know it, don't you?" And as he tries to squash Flick one last time, but Ada comes to his side to stop him. And that bravery, of course, unites the colony. When he turns around, he sees the entire colony united in ranks, united in arms, just ready to fucking pounce. And he
so
says,
many arms.
And Flick, or Ada rather, comes to the side and gives him a new mantra. She says, "The ants pick the food, the ants keep the food, and the grasshoppers leave." Then Thumper tries to get all hard and high, you know, and tries to eat Dot, but she slaps him across the face. Of course, when that doesn't work, Dim comes to her side with a mighty growl and scares Thumper away. With the tide changing to their favor, the grasshoppers split, leaving Hopper to fend for himself. Of course, they grab him, they load him in one of the cannons, but before they get an opportunity to shoot him out, the clouds open up and rain starts to fall.
Man, just when we thought we were done, just when we thought we were safe, man. I remember being a kid feeling this and be like, "Oh no,
they had
it. Like it was over." And then he gets fucking ejected from the rock and it's like, "Oh my God, he has Flick now. How could this possibly turn out good?" You know?
Did you not think as a kid, like, wait, why are they going to shoot him out of the rocket thing? Like, he has wings. Like, that's a situation that he can totally be fine.
Oh, no.
Well, I was just like, he's just going to come back.
No, like, when the rain started, that's when I was like, "Oh, no, some shit's about to go down."
Well, no, but I was... but what I was saying is, like, shooting him in the rocket, like, that seems like a bad move. Like, pluck his wings, you know? I wanted is the crowd to
mutilate
him, pull
him
apart,
give him a little.
Yeah,
I thought they were gonna take him down to the anthill, just torture
him.
Like, to get answers.
Yeah, childhood Kevin
answers.
Was way more
what
pragmatic
answers?
About the situation than I was.
All the answers, Kevin.
What answers does he have? Tell us.
Where's Rachel? Yeah, exactly. Where's Rachel? Where's Rachel?
Of course, Hopper absconds with Flick, but the troop ain't having that. They chase after him and rip off one of Hopper's antenna. Ada saves Flick, and a high-speed chase ensues. Flick gets another idea and faces off against Hopper, who is super, super confident until he gets he's like, I'm just going to come back. He's like, you haven't done shit. I'm going to get more grasshoppers and come back next season with a vengeance. But with all his bravado, he has failed to notice that he has walked right into a trap. Flick has led him to the edge of the real bird's nest. And the bird ain't wasting no time. He scoops up Hopper very quickly and feeds the grasshopper to its little chicks below, who are more than happy to just eat him alive.
And this is
also so scary.
Extra terrifying. Yeah. So like, not only is this scary for like just what it is, but like this is that level of CG where it like it's not Uncanny Valley, but it's definitely something where I'm like, these things are fucking terrifying because they don't look like birds.
Yeah.
But also, that's not how birds eat, right? Isn't it like the mama bird eat it and then
You gotta
But the little, when you're a little bird, you take anything that falls in that nest, Kevin.
Someone tells me that Pixar Review is going to have a lot of science with Kev.
That's true.
Go through it all.
With the day saved, PT flee, and his new recruits now, including Molt, head out. But Flick
just
stays
so
behind.
Perfect.
I know.
He's just like so stoked to be part of the production. Like,
he's just happy.
I would watch that.
Yeah. But Flick stays behind with Ada, who thanks the troop for giving them back their dignity, and they thank her with a rock. And then this is the fun callback because they're like, must be a circus thing, which is a nice little callback. Flick and the troop say their goodbyes, and the troop starts a round of applause, which Flick quickly realizes is for him. Ada kisses him on the cheek and then is coronated as queen. And then Heimlich turns into a broke-ass butterfly.
Fucking funny. Yo, earlier I said when I was a little kid, it's like everything they did was funny. Nothing was funnier than I'm a beautiful butterfly. And like Andy said, it was in all the trailers and all the things, but like I would watch that every Disney Channel commercial that they would play it on Mike's Super Short Show, whatever the fuck they were doing. And I would just be like injected in my veins. Comedy doesn't get better than that.
I loved it being like, from up here, you look like ants.
They look like ants. It's like 2 feet above the ground.
This always pissed me off. I felt like they fucked with us in a way that like always, I felt cheated. I wanted him to like grow. I wanted him to be a big, beautiful butterfly. But instead, we have these
funny,
furious.
Subvert expectations, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's how they got it.
I feel like that quote of I'm a beautiful butterfly and then another quote from Finding Nemo are the ones that have like maintained throughout the years of like they're always going to be funny no matter what kind of context somebody throws them in real life.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a beautiful butterfly reminds me a lot of the did we just become best friends from Step Brothers? That's just like,
yeah,
it is just more than the movie.
Of course, they all take off into the sky, holding Heimlich so he thinks he can fly, as a bunch of the ants use Flick's original harvester to launch fireworks into the sky after them. And then the credits roll, and we get more really weird fake outtakes.
And we get Randy Newman, baby.
And we get some Randy Newman. And that is
Bugs
Life.
Do we not like the fake outtakes?
I never liked the fake outtakes because they're written.
I didn't even watch those.
I just think they're bad.
But I love them. I always thought they were good. Andy,
I loved them. I loved them as a kid. I loved them as a kid, but I fucking started hating them.
I had to go back to Toy Story 4 and review to get the rankings and stuff prepped for this. And Andy was like, I just skipped randomly. Andy was going off, and I was like, I don't think I've ever heard Andy this negative about anything.
I hate it.
Boy hates his bloopers, man.
I hate the fake bloopers. I liked them as a kid. Did I compare them to people on Facebook making fake videos and like pretending that they're giving money to homeless people, but really everybody's acting and they're just kind of, did I compare it to that? Because I didn't get that far into it.
I could see, I could see both being equally as horrible.
I liked them as a kid. I hate them now.
I think they're fun.
I hate using the word cringe, but they make me cringe.
I want to briefly add, I meant to say this earlier, but I miss, like, it kind of bums me out that when I watch A Bug's Life on Disney Plus, it doesn't start with the Gary's Game? Like, it'd be cool if it did. Or at least gave me the option to.
I watched it before.
Like, yeah, good for you. That's smart.
Joey wanted that full experience.
Joey watched it anyway.
I want the DVD experience. Like, just pop it in.
You want the menu playing over and over on the
home screen? Oh my gosh, yes. 100%.
The second loop of the song that doesn't ever loop correctly. Andy, hit me with a little bit of that haiku in review.
Seven syllables in the middle. You need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form, just like Zaid Wilson did. The Bird Plan. Not great, but things ended better than anticipated.
Wow.
Wow.
Real good. Wow. Real good.
Let's get his conflict.
Lee Polero says, hoppers hopping mad. Grasshoppers made the ant sad. The bird ate the bad.
He did.
He did. Good for you, Lee Polero.
Very utilitarian. I love that.
And then finally, of course, miscellaneous has to do with the... Wait, no. Yep, there we go. The two miscellaneous were back to back. This one for A Bug's Life. Seeds roll down the slant. Offerings awfully scant. Hard life for an ant. Incorrect branding. Circus comes in for landing. Misunderstanding. Incomplete supply. And then Flick's plan goes awry. Now, Hopper must die.
Fuck.
Damn. Miscellaneous is too good. Too damn good. Andy, hit me with some of that ragu.
Bagu. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys. I'm assuming we're just starting the list off here because I cannot remember who the bad guys were.
I slacked you, Nick.
Did you really?
He's got it.
Oh, yeah. Slack.
Okay, all right. I apologize, it's everyone.
Ossolopso or whatever.
Get with the program.
I don't think that's...
All right.
Number that's one.
Welcome
Although,
back to Rad.
To be fair, for our list, that wouldn't be that crazy. Sorry, go for it, Nick.
Right now, we've got number brains. One, Lotsa from Toy Story 3. The Prospector, really? Prospecta slash Al from Toy Story 2.
Over
Woody and Sid from Toy Story 1. And then Gabby from Toy Story 4. And I said, I don't remember a lot of these, but Gabby was especially creepy. So I think we ranked her too low on the list. Sure. She was creepy, but I don't think she was scary. Hopper
from a child
in the gang.
At a garage sale.
Yeah. This is interesting. So like, I think trying to place them. Go for it, Joe.
Oh, I think this is number one. I think Hopper is so good that for me, this is the one that stuck with me. I think the other Toy Story ones, like the Prospector and the bear, whose name I butchered.
Lots of hugs.
But this is the one that has stuck with me the most. Is I think the performance is 10 out of 10, and I think it was actually terrifying as a child.
So rank one is Lotsa, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to put this rank two because I think that they were both performed really great, but Lotsa sort of being this, similar to the Prospector, kind of being these good characters, right, at first, and really dark shit was happening behind the scenes. I think that adds an extra dimension that I really enjoy. And I think Hopper's just great at being bad the whole time and having these, you know, these ants not only get the food, and when they fuck up says, we want double next time. Like, that's so evil. And they are prepared to kill them, but also smart enough to know that they are outnumbered. I think it's so calculated, but I think lots of just being this nice, benevolent figure in the beginning of the movie and then turning kind of is really, really fucked up. So I will put Hopper at number two.
I'm with you, Andy, but I'd go even number three because I think that Lotsa and the Prospector and Al both have a lot more depth than Hopper has. Hopper, scary as hell, and is probably the most evil and like good at being evil that we'll see in these. And I think does that completely well, but there is just that added depth and the kind of layers to the darkness and story. And like, it's the Thanos thing of like, mm-hmm. when you can like look at the movie from their perspective and be like, all right, cool. I vibe with this a little more. And with Hopper, you can do that, but you're kind of like, well, you're just an asshole. Whereas, and especially I would put it as third under Prospector and Al, because I think having those two villains both work as well as they did with the storyline as a whole, they just worked a lot better for me. But I do think that it's a lot stronger than Woody and Sid or Gabby.
Yeah, you're definitely right about the Prospector, kind of the motivations behind there of what he was really feeling the whole time. It's obviously evil on the on the outset, but then kind of hearing his motivations. And yeah, I think you're right.
Does anyone disagree that we put Hopper at three? Well, motion passes. No, Kevin, go.
Well, no, I mean, I was going to say, agree that I think I would put Hopper at three, but I do want to put a little asterisk to that I don't think that the Bear is as bad. Like, I do think the Prospector and Al should be number one, just because, like, they're both so fucked up and, like, their stories are so fleshed out. Hopper, though, I think is the best performance we've seen so far for the bad guy, but...
See, I'm with. I think I'm with everyone on this one too. I think Hopper is a great bad guy, but I think he's like a bad guy 1.0 from a very cookie cutter Western, where you're like, this guy's motivations are just to be a bad guy. Whereas I do think there's a lot more dimensions with Latza and the Prospector / Al. So, Joey, unless you have anything more, unless you want to go on right now with a veto vote.
No, I mean, I can't say anything. I do say that I think the turn of villains does get a little bit samey in Pixar, because I feel like that's definitely a trend of how they handle their villains. So in that case, I like that this one is so just like openly a bad guy and manipulative, and he like knows that they're outnumbered, but he's figured out a way to the game the system that I think makes him a little bit more scary than anything else. But I mean, it's one of those things where it's like they're all so good, like good in different ways, that I'm not fighting for this one.
Yeah, Hopper really does remind me of just, you know, the ultimate rich corporation dude keeping the workers in line. Like, that's a lot creepier, I think, Joe, that the fact that I feel like it's a little bit more relatable of like, no, if they think they can face us and stand up to us, we can't ever let them think that. And that's like, it just feels like kind of real life sometimes, and I think that's really creepy. And Kevin Spacey did a great job. Also, awful person. Do we have to? All right. We just have an asterisk at the bottom every time, like, the whole fucking time. Yeah.
All right. So the final rankings are: number one, Latza from Toy Story 3. Number two, the Prospector and Al from Toy Story 2. Number three, Hopper from Ants. I don't know why I wrote that, but that's where it's going to be from now on. Great. Woody and Sid from Toy Story 1. Number four, and Gabby from Toy Story 4.
Does Joey have veto powers that we're not aware of?
I'd like to get everyone's opinion on it, give everyone an opportunity to talk. If Joey's made a proper argument for it and was like, no, I think they deserve to be number one, it should knock that out of the park, I would veto it myself, because none of y'all are
so writing
the
list. So do you have veto
power? Keeper of the list.
I don't have veto power.
Who has the veto?
I don't have
power?
Veto power per se, but you guys probably also won't remember how we ranked these next week. So I could just fucking jumble this list up. Only Tim will know, because he slacked it to me. But if I delete that, he won't know.
It's on my doc, but you know. Anyways, it is time to rank the Pixar universe. Kev, can you bring up the beautiful rankings that Andy Cortez made? Currently, number one is Toy Story 3. Number two is Toy Story 2. Number three is Toy Story 4. And number four is Toy Story. Where do we rank A Bug's Life?
I would kick it off at number five. I like this movie, but I don't think it rivals anything that they did prior with Toy Story. I think those movies were more creative. I think they were more character driven. And I think, you know, you empathize with both the plight of the, you know, especially in Toy Story 1, where kind of Woody is kind of the bad guy in it. I think that's a much more creative use of that. Plus, I think they're just, you know, the idea of how they made these characters go from being toys and then transforming the kids' room into being this whole beautiful reality, I think was just amazing. And I don't think A Bug's Life quite got there.
I would agree. I'd go number five as well. I think it's kind of easy to be prisoner of the moment and not remember how good some of the early Toy Story movies were, because I think this movie had a great cast and everybody played their role perfectly. No side character outstayed their welcome or did too much and was too, you know, every once in a while you get one of those side characters like, I could have done with less of that person. But I think everybody here was perfect. And I still put it number five because, you know what, Rex in Toy Story, I think, is still like the unsung hero of the franchise. And like every line that Rex says makes me laugh. I do agree, Nick. I think this I think the earlier Toy Story movies, even with Toy Story, the original one, I think it's just overall a bit more of a creative movie. And I feel like this movie will rank low by the end of all of the rankings, but it's still a very enjoyable movie.
Definitely.
Joey, what do you think?
This is where it's hard for me in the sense that I have to separate favorite from best, because I don't necessarily have like a huge love for the Toy Story movies, which I know is controversial. Also been a very long time since I've seen 1, 2, and 3. Because I didn't do Toy Story in review with you guys, so it's hard. I have to kind of pull back in my memory for that one. But I think that the characters have a little bit more depth in character development in Toy Story than they do in this. This does seem a little bit more flat than what I remember those stories being. So I feel like I have to put it at 5, even though I think in my favorites list, they would rank differently.
Okay.
I actually agree with you guys. I love the Toy Story movie so much, and this movie's great, but like, it's funny, like my nostalgia is more for Ants, and rewatching it was fun, but like, it didn't hit the highs that the Toy Story movies hit.
Doesn't do a whole lot extra or special, you know.
My nostalgia is definitely with A Bug's Life, and I loved this movie when it first came out because the cast was just so great. And just like being a 9-year-old boy, everything just felt relatable to me. It reminded me a lot of watching Aladdin, where I was just like, this is the one for me. Bug's Life felt that way to me, where I was like, this is a Tim movie. And all these years later, I still think that this movie's great. The soundtrack is, like Joey was talking about, like, it is underrated. The instrumentals, and it got an Academy Award, but like, it's underrated to me, where I also wouldn't necessarily identify Bug's Life as having a killer soundtrack, but it does. The cast is great. The voice acting is great. The plot is everything it needs to be. And the villain is excellent at just being an evil bad guy. But having said that, there's something so special about all of the Toy Story movies that I think put them in a league of their own above this. So I also think it's number 5. But man, I can't wait to keep reviewing these movies, because if this is our worst one so far and we're 5 in, like, that's a pretty good sign.
I'm so stoked to get to Cars 3 because I never saw Cars 3.
I'm excited. Very excited.
I'm very scared of Cars 2. I wanted to put that out there.
Everyone, let us know in the comments below what you think about this, because our current rankings right now are number 1, Toy Story 3, number 2, Toy Story 2, number 3, Toy Story 4, number 4, Toy Story, and number 5, A Bug's Life. Like I said, later, we are going to be doing WandaVision in review on Friday, and then next week, we're going to be returning with, give me a second to figure this out.
Monsters,
Monsters Inc.
Is it? Hold on.
That's what it says in the calendar.
Give him a second, guys. Give him a second to figure it out.
Yes. We are going to be doing, starting off, Godzilla in review and be doing Monsters, Inc. It will be the Godzilla vs. Kong universe. So starting with Godzilla 2014. Get hyped. And until then.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.